Good morning. It is live from Saratoga. It is not Steve Bick, but it is David Steinberg and Joan Rivers for Johnny Carson. Seth Merrill and Chuck Simon in for Steve this morning. Steve, little travel time. He's been out of town for the last few days, but Chuck and I are set up by the racing office at Saratoga and happy to be filling in, giving Steve a day off. Steve, doing fine? I'm sure he set it up yesterday, but just to reiterate, doing fine, just as I say, traveling a little bit. Chuck, good morning.
Good morning, Seth.
Happy to be here. Happy to have a little Saratoga conversation as the day progresses, and we'll have a full show coming up at about 9:30. Joe Clancy will visit with us, and maybe we'll get a call in with Steve as well during that time period. Joe, of course, will take a look at the jump race today at Saratoga. 10 o'clock, Dick Powell will jump on. We'll talk a little Saratoga, maybe a little European racing as well, as they're underway at Goodwood on this Wednesday. Kim Weir from the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation will join us at about 10:30. Oh, a little bit before that, we'll plug Tony Kahlo in for a few minutes as well. Tony Kahlo from Finger Lakes and Finger Lakes today with a guaranteed $50,000 for their pick five. So we'll get a little in from Tony. 11 o'clock, John Serpazian, the handicapper from the Saratoga Special, who perennially is one of the leaders on the handicapping side at Saratoga. 11:30, hope to get Tim Wilkin over. The hardest working man in the racing game comes in early, leaves late, and we'll see what Tim has to say maybe about being at the barns this morning and racing over the past few days and going forward as well. So a fun 3 hours underway. Again, Seth Merrill and Chuck Simon. Chuck, any thoughts on the last few days of racing?
Well, we had some things that you don't see very often, like a race that didn't happen, even though it actually did happen. A couple upsets. Certainly the malice that I think we all got sucked in on the blinkers added angle there. And I mean, when you think about it, when a horse is 3 to 5, equipment changes might not be the best thing to rely on at that point. But I mean, Clairier might just be in a little better form than Malathat at this point, and I mean, she's beat her on the square the last two races, so really solid effort. It's turned into a hell of a rivalry. They've actually raced against each other 6 times, with Malathat now only holding a 4-2 lead.
I like Clairier. The morning handicapping show. Handicapping most mornings over on Capital OTB TV, and handicap the entire card every day over at Equidaily as well. And I like Clairier, but I said when I handicapped, they were, to me, talent-wise, it was razor close. And I just, Clairier is just one of those horses I've kind of liked throughout the career. And so I tilted just on that it's a horse I kind of like. So I was happy with the result. But given that Todd Pletcher said, gee, Malathat wasn't really looking good in the paddock, I thought she ran pretty well if she wasn't looking good in the paddock.
Because
it was another pretty good duel between the two.
Yeah, some people act like she got beat like Secret Oath got beat the day before. I mean, that was more of a runaway. Nest was a pretty dominant winner of a race that, sometimes short fields don't go as expected just because it's not like a typical race where you have speed, stalkers, closers. But that race got completely turned upside down with Society, who was the two-horse for Steve Asmussen, who looked like the main speed in the race, stumbled badly at the start. And actually, Ken McPeak's horse, the one Butterbean, stumbled too, but she's a dead closer anyway. So really, she just got, like, she was a football field behind. But, you know, Nest had to kind of rush up, and Luis Saez kind of got caught in a jam with Secret Oath, and that, you know, things all of a sudden aren't going as planned, and, you know, he was kind of seemed like shadowing Nest, but she just shrugged Secret Oath off and just buried her. And, I mean, that was a huge performance that has them, you know, possibly considering the Travers.
Mike Rapoli in the winner's circle afterwards. I was there with Tim Wilkin, in fact, and talking, and most of the press had already walked away, and Tim mentioned something, and you're thinking about the Travers, and he kind of, well, and I said, wow, you're really considering? And he said, I'm Mike Rapoli. Of course I'm considering it. So we will see where Nest goes. But certainly off of that, that was the wow performance of the weekend, you would have to think. Very impressive. And I'll get some opinions on the no contest, because I was kind of surprised that there was consternation on Twitter, because I was up in the press box and somebody caught it as the race was going and said, oh, they can't move the starting gate. And I looked over. They were coming onto the turn when they were still struggling with the starting gate. And given that, I can't knock the outrider at all for, erring on the side of caution, as it were. Now, as it turned out, they got the gate out of the way in time, but it was close. And again, given the situation, and then when you watched the replay and saw the outrider was waving people off, and at least four of the jockeys kind of pulled up, it was a no-brainer. And again, if you're going to err at all, it should be on the side of caution, and that's what happened. So I had no argument at all with the situation there.
No doubt. I mean, the outrider has to get into position to make that call as well. Remember that he's generally on the far outside of the rail in case something happens, and he gets the radio call. He's got to get himself into position, which, number one, is the first thing that's going to alert jockeys that, hey, maybe something's coming, going on, because they see him moving towards them. And like you said, it's a split-second thing, and you can't fault them for erring on the side of caution, because if the gate does get stuck on the track, it's a disaster. It happened to me in a race.
Oh, really?
At Oaklawn Park about 12, 13 years ago, and I was going to win. Calvin Burrell told me it wasn't a matter of if we were going to win, it was how far we were going to win by. And naturally, I owned half the horse as well. But the gate, they did not have a backup tractor, which they did here at Saratoga, and most tracks now do have a backup tractor in case this happens. The backup tractor was actually the one that pulled the faulty tractor and the gate off the rail. And credit the maintenance guys and the assistant starters for scrambling to get it done. But like you said, it's a split second decision, and it's not like you have 5 minutes to weigh the options.
Yeah.
You have to make the call and live with it. And my dad, who had bet the winner and had the exacta, said, what are you going to do? I mean, these things happen, and you can't fault them for doing that. But on Twitter, there's going to be consternation no matter what. I mean, if someone decided they were going to hand free money to everybody, there'd be people complaining that, oh man, I'm going to have to pay taxes on this money. Like, there's always going to be consternation on Twitter no matter what. But that's what makes it, Twitter.
Yeah, no, you nailed it. I agree totally. I participate in Twitter. I pick my spots because I think there are great things about Twitter, and I jump in and kind of play accordingly.
Sometimes I can't help myself.
We'll also tout, you do the Going in Circles podcast, you have the Substack, the Saratoga blog, and you write some things on there, and I want to hit on your 25 Saratoga things to do, places to go that you put up just recently. I'll add some of my ideas in too, but first, talk a little bit about the Going in Circles podcast.
We've been doing the podcast for about a year and a 2.5 years now, believe it or not, and it started Jason Bidas, who's Jose Lescano's jock agent. We were during the pandemic, there was nothing going on, and he's like, you should do a podcast. And I was like, why? And he said, because you know what the hell you're talking about. He goes, and like, what else do we got to do? Which was the truth. But we started it, and it's taken off. We've far exceeded our expectations. Right now, we're just doing a Monday show, Monday night, and we tape it Monday night with my co-host, Barry Spears, who's a really knowledgeable handicapper. He's an excellent handicapper, as a matter of fact, far, far better than I. But I think it works because we come at things from a different angle, and we're friends in real life, but we don't agree on everything, and I think that we can have respectful disagreements, and we don't always follow the racing company line, so to speak. So, you know, it's kind of a wide-ranging. We, you know, usually racing gives us a topic every week. It seems there's always one controversial thing to discuss. But, you know, we try to hit on all the pertinent things. And it's not a formal thing. And we don't bring people. And I didn't want to do one where we interviewed guys and said, oh, geez, how's your horse doing? You know, like everybody else. And everybody said, oh, well, geez, my team did great. I mean, there's plenty of people out there doing those, and those are great. But we just wanted to have a forum where we could talk frankly. And yeah. And I think that's helped us a lot.
It is a lot of fun. I love the name Going in Circles.
Yeah, and I don't like freak out like Bick does as much. But, you know, when Steve gets mad and he starts to pause, and then he just, like, the decibel level just goes through the roof. And we don't share, you know, tuna casserole recipes or things like that. And I didn't bring any today. We're not trying to Wally Pip Steve here, you know. We're just filling in. The guy's out there playing with ponies on the ocean. So, I mean, he needs it. Steve needs it, especially after being at Monmouth and in the intense heat. And that's just the residual from the cooked racetrack that they provided on Saturday.
I did notice he tweeted out and kind of was bragging about the cap he was wearing. I think it was a Breeders' Cup. But what I noticed, out of focus a little bit in the background, there was a swimming pool. There wasn't a racetrack.
No. Yeah, I kind of left that alone. I mean, Steve comes up with some hats out of nowhere sometimes. And you know, the biggest problem I have with hats, and I have a million hats, is like the racetrack giveaway hats, they're always too small. They don't take in consideration big head people like me, you know. But
maybe that's an invention.
It could be.
Hat extender.
A hat extender, that's actually a, well, there's not very many tracks give anything away anymore, so that used to be a thing. It's like it's not even a thing anymore. I talk about how racing changed. No more giveaways. I remember, you know, here, this was the mecca of giveaways, racetrack giveaways, and people used to call me, and they were like, can you get me a shirt? And I would be like, no, I cannot get you a shirt. I'll send you $10 instead of the shirt, because I don't want to stand in line and spin, you know. Remember the people used to spin, they'd come back.
And oh, yeah.
And then, you know, 3 months later, you'd see the same T-shirt that was rarely of high quality at CVS, you know, 3 for $10. Or the best was when people would tell me, oh, I want to get it and use it for Christmas gifts. It's like, wow, that's a great gift, a T-shirt. You got at the track for free. Well, I must be high on your list.
With the spinners, it would be 3 hours later, they'd be on eBay.
Oh, man. You know, I talking about the blog that we started up, and that was Barry's idea. He says, you know, you should do a Steve Criss-style blog. Steve Criss retired from the racing form, and he used to do a daily blog. And, of course,
it is a great idea.
Following his giant footsteps, it's hard to emulate him. But we tried, and Saratoga's like a drug, man. Like, people just, I started getting subscribers and people following, and the hits just multiplied. We get 400 times the hits that we normally get. Not that, you know, we're the New York Times or anything, but something about Saratoga, they want to follow it, they want to be involved. And I know maybe, you know, it's still early in the meet, and it's long, and it gets to be a little bit of grind at the end, but I'm enjoying it. I mean, this is my first time here for the summer. Oh, I can't even remember. I guess the last time I was training full-time in maybe 2009 was the last time I had horses here full-time. I had a couple horses here in 2016, I believe. But no, it's there's no other place like it, and it's you know.
Yeah, daily recap I think is a great idea, and I linked to you over on Equidaily today as well to push people over and make them aware.
Yeah, you know, things happen
on a day to day basis. Yeah,
things happen on a day to day basis, and most racing, I mean, let's face it, most racing for most of the year is pretty mundane outside of Saturdays, and the cards kind of get. You know, they build up the super cards and the Saturday cards, and the rest of the racing is generally not all hell, but, you know, not that interesting. I mean, for lack of a better word. Here it's different. I mean, obviously, look, we have a stake today, a short horse stake, but an interesting stake.
Yeah.
It's kind of an interesting race, and we'll get to that later. But, you know, we got a stake on a Wednesday, and, you know, we have the jumpers, and like you said, weird stuff happens here,
yeah.
You know, like no contests and...
And with the size of the money that goes into the pools, just kind of keeping track of the picks and whatnot, I think people are interested to see and talk about how that all that plays out. And so, again, to have a daily blog, very interesting and worthwhile, certainly. And I will also tout, I pulled up your recent article, 25 Saratoga Things to Do, Places to Go. I thought maybe we could spend a few minutes kind of going over that, maybe giving people an idea. If they're going to head to Saratoga during the meet and they're not familiar, we'll give some ideas. And I was thinking last night, typically before the meet, Steve and I had one of the couple of weeks leading into the meet when I'm on, we'll toss out some places people can go and grab something to eat in the area. And this list includes some of those. But let's go over your top 25 things to do. And at the top of the list, Saratoga Racecourse. But number two, Saratoga Casino and Hotel right across the street. And I think the Harness Track made a great move. They had been doing mostly afternoon programs, but a couple of weeks ago with the opening of the flat track here, they went to Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights. And I think Sunday night's going to be a lot of fun for people because going back to when I was a kid, it's the old doubleheader. Come over to the track, get a little afternoon action in, then head across the street and watch the harness horses in the evening. I think Friday, Saturday, and as I say, I think particularly Sunday night, going to be a lot of fun for people this year.
Yeah, let me just give props to Donna Brothers, who I stole the idea from. And I actually read her list, and I mean, no offense to Donna, but a lot of the places on Donna's list didn't make my list, like ballets and yoga places and things like that. We have a lot more, well, food-centric. But no, she gave me the list, and I said, well, let's look at it from like a degenerate's point of view. So the Harness Track, of course, in the makes. I did a doubleheader with the ubiquitous Brian Beer, former harness trainer, full brother to Mike Beer of the DRF. We did a doubleheader, and I was completely Saturday, when I was completely wiped out, and Sunday I was half comatose. Did not make it to the races to see the no contest in person, but no. You
Saturday night was a big night over at the Harness Track.
Yeah, they had the Garrity. It's $250,000 race, and the old master Wally Hennessy snuck up the rail, knocked it out, and they had some sire stake races. And, you know, the big drivers were there, and it was a decent crowd. I don't know that they handled that much, but. It was a nice crowd and a nice race. It's a nice little spot, and it's free to get in. You can. There's plenty of parking, and like you said, you don't have enough action here. You can just go across there and fire.
Yeah, going back, I cut my teeth over at the Harness Track. That's how I got into the game, and kind of I started over there playing the harness side of things. And I remember going over there when I was a kid in the summertime. There'd be 5,000 or 6,000 people over there. There was that big bleachers at the end that was always full of people. So
yeah,
that's kind of how I got started. And I still like to go over and still go over fairly often. And there are some mornings or some afternoons on Capital OTB TV when I'm in the studio down in Albany the rest of the year and doing the afternoon handicapping show. Where we plug some Saratoga harness in. So I'm still doing some handicapping there as well on TV. Obviously, this time of year, we're live from the backstretch. I got the morning off this morning. Normally, I'd be doing the handicapping show this morning, but they gave me the morning off to come over here and do this. But do want to remind people, Capital OTB TV, you can stream us via YouTube in the morning. Go to the Capital OTB YouTube channel, and you can check us out. Handicapping show at 9, an interview show at 10. We got to get you over to talk a little bit about the podcast and more.
Yeah, for sure.
Further down the list, a little food as we get past the racetracks. You got Marino's Pizza, Dairy House, Westside Sports Bar and Grill. Just go over there and say hello to Dave Harmon. The Barrel House, I was there the other day for a little TRF Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation event. Taverna Nova, a couple of places right over on Beekman Street. So some nice food ideas floating out there.
Food's important in my world.
Me too. I'm right with you.
We don't skip meals here.
I will say, I had never been to Dairy House before.
That's a Jason Blewett suggestion.
I have heard good things, and I went the other day because I went and ate dinner at Winslow's, which I will tout because I'm a turkey guy. I eat turkey like three times a week. If you want a good turkey dinner, Winslow's is the place to go. So I'm leaving Winslow's, driving down. There's Dairy House, and I have heard good things. So I stopped in and walked up to the window and asked the young lady, probably 17 years old, "Hey, I'll have a chocolate ice cream soda with vanilla ice cream." And she said, "We don't have chocolate soda." I kind of leaned back and looked up at the board and made sure ice cream. I said, "No, an ice cream soda, you know, chocolate ice cream soda." She goes, "Yeah, we don't have chocolate soda." No, and I said, "No, I get that, but you know, the seltzer and the." And another girl walks up behind her and says, "Yeah, we can make that." And the first girl says, "With the syrup." And now they agree. And she said, "I was just explaining that to her." Well, I should have known at this point this was not going to work out. So what I wound up with eventually was a cup full of soft vanilla ice cream that clearly she had poured some chocolate syrup down the side and then a little seltzer in. It was a whiff on the ice cream soda. But I will be back because I've heard good things.
You got to give it another shot.
Yeah, really.
Everybody has their off days.
This one I didn't know about, but I'm going to stop by. Cardona's Saratoga Market, because you're describing the Italian Hero sandwich. That one I'm going to stop by. I haven't been there before.
Used to be called the Roma Deli, but it was bought by Cardona's, who I think has a big market in Latham and in Albany. But it's still good. The sandwiches are good, and they do it in an assembly line. So they get you in and out of there pretty quick, but you know, I give them 2 stars.
Yeah, I'm gonna because I am big on the Italian Hero, no question about it. Saratoga National Historical Park, obviously that's one that's going to be on people's agenda because that's fairly well
people
known.
People should go there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Get some history in here, people. Learn something. That's why I thought when the previous incarnation of Naira Management decided that they were going to give out red jackets at Saratoga, I thought to myself, that's probably not the greatest idea because red jackets were the people we threw out of here so that we could own this place.
I hadn't even thought about that.
The red jackets are on the other side.
Well, now we're friends with them.
We'd all be playing soccer.
Malta Drive-In, I don't know if I've ever been to the Malta Drive-In, but that's right on Route 9, and I go back and forth a lot. And I can tell you it's popular because you on a Friday night, man, they are lined up on Route 9. They're on the shoulder, and then they're in the middle lane turning in. And that is a popular destination, you know, one of the last drive-ins in this area.
Yeah, it's relatively cheap. It's $6 for kids, and I think under certain age, nothing. Matter of fact, the last time I was there, I was on a double date, Bob Clancy and I. It was a high school friend of mine. We're on a double date, and we almost got in a brawl with a bunch of kids from Balsa Spa. So I'm back since. I'm a little wary of them. But it's a great spot, and like, hey, how many, like you said, how many drive-in theaters actually even have survived? When we were kids, we went to the drive-in theaters a lot.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no question about it. There was way more in the area. That's, again, probably one of the remaining few. But there are some more food places on here. We'll get back to this maybe a little bit later. I wanted to toss out a couple that didn't. Well, first of all, down on honorable mention, I would have moved this up because it was my hangout. I used to have a television production company in town, and I was 2 floors up for them. Desperate Annie's only makes an honorable mention.
Well, Desperate Annie's got on the drinking list, the Dave Spears drinking list. If you don't know Dave Spears, is just hang around Saratoga for a little while at places where they drink, and you'll know him pretty quick. But we actually, Substack ran out of space. I didn't have any space. people asked about a lot of the old staples like Hattie's and Pinnell's. And, of course, you know, I mean, everybody knows those. So I tried to get a little bit, you know, go a little layer underneath the ones that everyone else is going to pick. And they're still great. And, you know, Desperate Annie's.
King's right across the street.
Location.
Yeah, that's highly recommended. The Principessa Elena Society, essentially Italian-American club in town.
The mayor says they got cheap drinks, so.
That's important. They are definitely in that arena. And the TRF event the other night, the gumbo, Kendrick Carmouche's gumbo, we'll ask Kim Weir about it. I forgot. I made it last year. I was going to, all day long on Monday, I was thinking it was Tuesday, but it was Monday night. And so about 10 o'clock on Monday night, I'm like, oh, I missed it. I guess it was a very well-attended event at Principessa Elena. Also wanted to toss out Ripe Tomato. I ate there the spring. I was there with my sister. My niece had pretty good pork and homemade applesauce. But I also wanted to toss out Eddie F's.
You know, I have not made it to Eddie F's yet.
Eddie F's, if you like. I spend a lot of time in Maine at, you know, kind of lobster shack stuff with a lobster roll and fried clams and whatnot. And highly recommend it to stop by Eddie F's for that type of thing when you're here in Saratoga. And they have a booth at the track.
Sounds like a plan. Get the Gary Siaka special over at Eddie F's. Gary's winning steaks for Eddie.
Uh-huh.
So
They're doing all right. There's no question about it. For a small outfit, and I had Eddie Fazone on the other day because he won the stakes race. And got emotional about it. And I after the race in the winner's circle, I don't blame him. You have a small outfit like he does, you win a stakes race up at Saratoga. It's certainly worth it.
You're allowed. Yeah, definitely allowed.
Yeah, no question about it. Joe Clancy is in the house. I will flag him down, and we'll bring him over and jump in and do a little conversation on some of the racing today, kicking off with the jump event, and talk a little bit about this and that with Joe. I think you put on. Bick told me that was a messed up headset. I will see. I was testing it yesterday, and to me it worked fine. So we'll see how it works out. And can you hear me?
Yeah,
I hear you. Maybe just pull it. There you go. I think we're good to go. Joe, good morning.
Good morning. How's everybody?
Very good.
You've never been to the Malta Drive-In?
No.
I don't understand.
So that's you're giving it a thumbs up?
Yeah. Well, when our kids were little,
yeah,
that was a great place to take them. You know.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Now that they're in their 20s, they just want to go to the bars, so it doesn't matter. But when they had a double feature in the old days of the special, if we got finished early, I could go catch the second movie with my wife and kids in the minivan. You know?
Oh,
we had to pay for two admissions.
Yeah. Minivan.
Very good, very good. Food places. What would you recommend food wise?
We stick to the basics, and we're sort of off Broadway. Henry Street Tap Room.
Okay.
Really
yeah.
Great beer selection. Good food. Good burger. And then the other place, which is, I don't know when they, I guess it's on Excelsior maybe, 9 miles east. They got a big outdoor part, and they have good stuff too.
That made the Donna Brothers list.
I saw her in there too, actually. So,
You go.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, that's funny. Yeah. And that's kind of the fun thing also about eating out in Saratoga. For folks who don't come or haven't been here or don't come that often, if you do, you know, go out to eat, it is not unusual to next table over, see a trainer or a jockey, and that's kind of fun, too.
Yeah, I don't get to too many of the fancy places. Maybe once or twice when my wife gets into town, we'll go treat ourselves somewhere. But the rest of the time, it's the basics like that. And we got a couple deals with them, 9 miles east, and the place next to Henry Street, the Flatbread Social. They feed us on deadline nights, which is good.
Oh, so, nice. Yeah, excellent. And once again, you're right across the street this year?
Yep. Yep, right on East Avenue in front of Fasig Tipton, and we got a good view of the Oklahoma. You can watch the lot of gate schooling going on, and then the turf works are a little far away to get much out of them, but you know, they're right there.
Yeah, you're a
nice view.
Conveniently located, as opposed to years ago being downtown, which was nice too. We talked about it when we had you on the show. I remember the Travis Stone internet radio show from the closet when you guys were downtown. I participated in that a couple of times.
Yeah, technology's changed, right? Yeah,
no question about it. There's a new issue of Saratoga Special out today. So for folks who aren't in the area, this is horseracing.com, and you can pull up the latest issue.
Yep, should be everything should be there, and it was kind of fun putting that together. You know, go back and recap Nest winning and Clary Ayer's win, and it was just good stuff to write about. Robin Sparkle's winning for Bruce Brown.
Yeah.
And good stories, and then a little bit of preview action heading in today, and Friday's curling, we got a piece on that too. So,
and going back a week to the jump race last week, that was a great story too with the Daltons and bred the horse, and I was trying to get Kate to come on the OTV show with me the next morning, and next thing I look, she's walking the horse down the track, and Keith McCalmont from Naira's trying to get some quotes. He's running down the track. Sean, your brother, offered to hold the horse for her so she could get her picture taken for a grade one win at Saratoga, but she wasn't letting go of the horse. She walked away, and then I asked Bernie, you and the wife want to come on, and he said, well, tomorrow morning we'll be halfway back to home, and but it was a great story.
Yeah, they're very hardworking people, obviously, you could tell, and it's not surprising at all that Kate said, no, I got to go back with the horse. But, it was a fun story to tell. I sort of knew enough of it, and they were in town. They were the first horse in town. I remember walking over. Jumpers all go to the stakes barn outside the paddock here when they ship in, and she was the only horse in the barn, basically, on the whole side. The other ones hadn't shipped in yet. They got up here a little early, and she trained a day or two with Peter Pugh when Bernie went back to Colonial to ride a horse, and it's that we used to see it a lot more, kind of with these sort of small operations. They bred the horse. They campaigned her dam, bred her, got a few runners out of her. We're trying to sell some horses out of her. It didn't really work out, you know. And then they've got this mare who's just come on and run really well. And when Bernie mentioned the horse motel somewhere near Penn National where they spent the night, I'm like, oh, we got to tell this story, you know. So it's great. Yeah. And yeah, they were right back on the road 2 hours after the race.
Yeah. You know? So. Crazy. And you alluded to the other results. Your thoughts, Chuck and I were talking about it earlier. Nest was a wow performance, and it was a nice little duel between Clary Ayer and Malathat.
Yeah, the Nest was impressive to me. I mean, that was just like, okay, I got this. You know,
it's a 104 buyer?
Yeah.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah. I mean, to me, she's just fired a warning shot to a whole lot of horses, you know. And, Malathat Clary Ayer wasn't quite the duel we anticipated, but you know, it was a very tactical four horse race. It was kind of interesting to watch how it all played out. And talking to Todd Pletcher afterwards, I don't think he thought Malathat was, you know, that's not her best. You know, whether he was a little worried about the heat, maybe dulled her or something. He expected her to be more in the race and give for her a better effort, but still she's second in there. Even if she was dull and things weren't quite right, she ran really well.
If she was dull, that was still a pretty good performance.
Exactly. And I don't think anybody wouldn't be disappointed in her. You might be disappointed in how it turned out, but Clary Ayer certainly just, I think she's getting a little bit better all the time. And it was funny to hear Steve Asmussen say it, and he looked at me and he went, incremental improvement. And he says, that's what we look for. And he says, she was already really good. It's just been incremental improvements ever since, you know. And she ran great, too. And should be some fun racing coming up here and then later on in the season.
I'll ask both of you guys, Chuck and Joe, thoughts maybe on the Haskell and the 2-year-old or the 3-year-old season as we head to the Travers. I mean, they're looking at Cyberknife. Chuck, what did you think of the Haskell on Saturday and Cyberknife maybe moving forward to the Travers?
Well, before the handicapping the card, I had really had a question of what Florence Giroux was going to do with Cyberknife, because he's been a bad actor at times and has not been very comfortable inside of horses, and he draws post one. And he took him back right from the start. He intentionally took him back. He stayed on the inside, and Taiba was actually ahead of him going down the backside, but Mike said that Taiba wasn't handling, and it probably wasn't handling the kickback more than anything. And people forget that Taiba really is a very inexperienced horse.
Yeah.
He ran a blowout win on the outside of horses first time out. Second time out in the Santa Anita Derby. Well, it's the Santa Anita Derby, but you remember there was a two-horse duel, basically. Richard Mandela's horse went to the lead, and Messier chased him. And the other two horses weren't really involved. So he had a good trip for a race of that caliber. I mean, it was obviously a huge feat to win it in the second start. But then the Derby, and you know, you just kind of draw a line through a lot of the Derby runners' races. Yeah. They never
annually
really, got into it. Yeah. So he's still a green horse. He this was really the first regular, normal race that he was involved in. And when Mike got him out, he came running. It just happened to open up the opportunity for Cyberknife to come up the inside and win. And Jack Christopher is a horse that we've been talking on the podcast for months when people said, well, you know, he's going to miss the Derby. And I said, when you look at Munnings' best performers, you don't see a lot of non-sprinters. And when you look at the dam side of Jack Christopher, you don't see much stamina. And that was always going to be the question with him. And he got a pretty good trip, and the fractions were a little quick, but the track was lightning fast on Saturday. I mean, it was
crazy.
They were about a tenth of a second in two other races away from having four track records set, which it's just, you know, in this day and age, you wouldn't think that those kind of things would happen. But Cyberknife ran well, and Taiba ran well, and this 3-year-old crop seems to be like they take turns.
Yeah,
you know, Rich Strike shows up for the Derby, then he's nowhere. Steve Asmussen's horse, not that time called. He ran second in the first two legs. He's a good horse, but he also lost those two races. Then
Episode.
Early Voting wins the Preakness. Now he's coming back in the Jim Dandy, but he's really only won one race. Plut Todd's horse that won the Belmont, he's out.
O'Donegal.
And, you know, now Cyberknife steps up. I mean, no one's been able to kind of repeat the performance and take control of the division, kind of like Ness did, even though she hadn't won her last race. I mean, that performance kind of stamped her as the 3-year-old filly at this point. The 3-year-old Colts, it's still, Epicenters, to me, is still the one that's kind of lurking there.
Yeah, he's like the marker. Here's my race, and he's, like you said, he's gotten beat, but he runs that good race.
He has no bad race.
Yeah, exactly, and some of the others do. You know,
I've been saying for a few weeks now that the first half of the season left the whole thing undefined, and I said the summer is going to define it. Haskell, Jim Dandy, Travers, and Joey, what are your thoughts on that? I don't know if the Haskell helped us any.
No, I think it left it, it made it more undefined, but you know, I guess we'll find out here. But trying to find a horse that's going to take some kind of control with a consistent good effort that wins. You know,
yeah.
I mean, some of those horses, the Epicenter is the main one who has run well but hasn't won. You know, and maybe it's, you know, maybe Early Voting. You know, maybe he's the horse who could take it over. I don't know. You know,
we forgot about Zandon.
Yeah,
who was actually the favorite in the Derby.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Who didn't run bad.
No. So I but that's half the fun. I mean, I think you're right a little bit with some of those horses and experience. They for whatever reason haven't been in positions to be in those kind of races. So they're going to need, some of them are going to need those. Epicenter's been in plenty of those, I think, you know, but some of the other ones haven't. So
and I think when you look at the fall, I mean, going into the fall races, the older horse races leading up to the Breeders' Cup Classic, your two favorites at this point, I would assume, would be Flight Line and Life is Good, both who are giant question marks at a mile and a quarter.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it might be a little bit more wide open than it appears, even though those two seem to be head and shoulders talent-wise above everyone else. I mean, Life is Good failed in his only try at a mile and a quarter, although it was on a super deep track over in the Middle East. But mm-hmm.
Yeah, Pletcher Lightline doesn't seem to think that distance is going to be a problem, but it's going to be interesting.
No, he doesn't. Yeah. He doesn't. And, I mean, Flightline, no one seems to think that distance is a problem, but no one also thought that Jack Christopher distance.
Yeah, everybody was excited to see him. Yeah, okay, he missed the Derby, but he's going to take control, or he missed the Triple Crown races, and he's just going to take control of this division Saturday, but no.
It kind of makes it more interesting in that there's no dominant horse, and you've got six or seven, eight different horses that maybe if they take that next step, like I said, Zandon's like the horse that everyone's forgotten about.
Yeah. And he's got a chance, knowing the barn a little bit, knowing how they, you know, he might be the sleeper lurking behind all this, you know, who could go on and improve through the fall again.
Yeah, because as you said, they're taking turns. Somebody has to string a couple together.
Yeah.
And how and when is that going to happen? As we're getting fewer and fewer chances. I mentioned, you know, Haskell, Jim, Danny, Travers. I'll throw the Pennsylvania Derby in that as well. So if some horses can maybe kind of string some together, I don't know amongst that group whether that's going to be possible, but get a nice three-year-old win here and then step against older horses later and do some. It's going to, the three-year-old scene is going to be very interesting. Particularly, we mentioned it, Joe, before you came, that they're Ness maybe goes to the Travers. And if she could beat the boys, then that three-year-old male picture really goes nuts.
Out the window, yeah.
But, you know, you also have the added monkey wrench of Taiba's trainers not allowed to race in the Travers. So I don't know exactly where they're going to go with him. I don't know if they're going to want to try the Pacific Classic. And where else is there, you know, to go. I don't see him going to the West Virginia Derby.
Let me step out against three-year-olds and face older with flight line.
Yeah.
Hello.
And he's not going to, you don't want to wait for Pennsylvania.
The flight line's presence is likely to keep that field to a minimum.
Yeah.
Kind of like Jackie's Warrior with the Vanderbilt this weekend. It's looking like a rather small group that's willing to face them. And you know, I can't really blame him too much. He's pretty tough.
Joe, let's jump in and take a look at the jump race today, get some of your opinions on that. Game plan also, I'm assuming, given last week, you will be jumping in on the NIRA pregame show today.
Yeah, so we do a little hit on the simulcast show and then jump in on the Fox show for, you know, starts at 1. So we've got 5 minutes before the first race, and it's actually kind of fun to kind of hopefully you share a little more of the jump game with a bigger audience.
Yeah, absolutely. So a little racing across I'm Racing Across America. That's the name of my day. America's Day at the Races.
I'm glad you came up with it.
So we'll look for you there as well. But let's get an early idea of today. And we kind of alluded to it when we were talking about the Daltons, but you got to salute the jump game. It's always a little bit like this at Saratoga with the one day of racing a week where they're bouncing around. But this year with Colonial, these guys are really bouncing back and forth this month.
Yeah, this week especially. They usually run a Colonial on Mondays, but they canceled, so they ran yesterday. You know, so that's a long travel from Colonial to back home, whether your base is in Maryland or Pennsylvania, and then get back on the road up here. So there were plenty of jocks who rode a Colonial yesterday and are riding here today.
Yeah, and so hats off to them. And as we were talking, I'm just looking because I think I pulled up the past performances. Speaking of running at Colonial today, here we go. I just did want to mention this. This to me, very intriguing. Stakes race at Colonial today. Mile and a half on the turf. $150,000 up for grabs. This is a flat race. Snap decision. Taking a shot in the Colonial stake.
There's his trainer, Jack Fisher, right here, trying to get his credentials in Saratoga, too. yes, he is prepping Snap Decision in the turf race at Colonial going a mile and a half, which, talking to Jack, I mean, what he wants is trying to make the Shepherd here in, you know, in 4 weeks or so, and wants him sharper. Like a lot of steeplechase trainer, Jack's based at a farm. He's got a really nice uphill polytrack gallop that he gets his horses really fit on. What they might lack is a chance to get some speed into them, which you need here. And he could go to Pimlico and, you know, try to put a nice work, a heavy work into him on the dirt or something like that. But, you know, taking a shot in the race at Colonial, nice, smooth turf course, you know, Forest Boyce rides a lot for Jack when he runs flat horses, kind of probably knows what he wants. He's coming out of a 3 mile jump race to a mile and a half flat race against pretty nice horses. I mean, Russ, you know, Cellist is in there and some other nice horses. And if you go back, I mean, Snap Decision's got some form. He was in there swinging against Bricks and Mortar, and he ran in the Hall of Fame here as a 3-year-old. But it's back there a little bit, and I think that speed he had then and even the speed he had early in his jump career, he's probably lost a little bit of it, especially going a mile and a half. He'll just be getting rolled. If the race was 2 miles, he might be, you know, paying a little more attention. I think it's great. It's great for the game. You want to see the horses cross over a little bit. And he's got plenty of pedigree behind him, and nice horse. I hope it all. You just hope it all goes well, and he gets here. And he didn't run into Smithwick basically because he knew he was going to carry either place is going to carry high weight in the handicap. And if he won the Smithwick, then he'd get hit again to try to make the Shepherd or whatever. So
I got a question for you. If he wins this race, will that be held against him in a steeplechase race?
Probably a little. I mean, if you're like Bill Gallo makes the weights, if I was making the weights, you know, you move him up because he's had a race, you know, where if he was coming in off his last jump race in May, you know, maybe you might not. I mean, again, depending on how he runs. I mean, if he, you know, I would think he's going to end up somewhere and he'll be running late, picking up some pieces of horses get tired and he's middle of the pack and Jack will be thrilled, you know.
I can remember Tommy Voss and Jonathan Shepherd running against flat horses, but rarely in a stake race.
Yeah, and rarely a horse of Snap Decision's caliber. You'd see it with younger jumpers. You know, Bruce Miller used to do it a lot. He had a horse, Grenade, that came up here and won a bunch over jumps that the Pieces, John Peace, owned, and he would always run him on the flat at, like, Delaware as a tune-up, and then come here and be tough. And I'm not sure. Again, I didn't dig into his... I'm not sure Snap Decision has many conditions... flat conditions left, because I think he won two or three. So, and you got to find a race. The mile and a half is a perfect tune-up, and there aren't that many mile and a half allowance races, you know.
They're rarely seen 12 furlong cutback.
Yeah, exactly. He's literally cutting back half the distance. Half the distance.
I thought about that.
Yeah, I get asked about it a lot with horses that don't have the kick going 2 miles or whatever. It'd be like a Olympic-level miler training for the marathon. Well, yeah, he can do it and be really good at it, but he doesn't have the kick he would have in the mile because he's trained to be, you know, to go farther. And that's the same thing with these horses.
Yeah, mile and a half cutback and 4 pounds off.
Yeah, exactly.
He'll think he's loose. Colonial Cup today at Colonial Downs against Snap Decision. It'll just be fun to see how the horse does there. But again, it's a little more. And I was going to try to flag Jack down, but as he walked out of the office, he zipped right by. So,
not surprising.
Yeah,
he's got two running here today, so he's got plenty to do and stretching his stable out a little bit by sending the.
And I haven't pulled up the steeplechase stats this year. Is he on top or?
No, he's third. He's kind of third behind Leslie Young. Had a really good spring, and she's in front. Carrie Bryan is second. I think Jack is third. Leslie and Carrie really reloaded in terms of adding horses to their barns. They got a lot more horses than anybody right now, and their horses they had really strong spring campaigns, and you know have done okay in the summer too at Colonial in a little bit we've had. Jack's been a little quiet for him. He bought some horses. COVID really kind of threw everybody's business model a little bit out the window for jump rates. I mean, anybody who bought a horse, any owner who bought a horse in 2019 to go racing in 2020 had really limited opportunities. I mean, they had 80 races all year. The whole year had 80 races. You know, and so then, and consequently, a lot of those owners are like, well, I'm not buying any more maidens in 20 because I've got all these ones that didn't get a chance to run, you know. So it's sort of and now you see this race today at Saratoga has some young horses in it that people bought last year, you know, to kind of bring along. And Jack's, too, for sure, have great ties to flat racing. And Arch Kingsley's horse is—it's a fascinating group. It's actually really cool to see.
Yeah, let's take a look at it. $70,000 up for grabs. The allowance non-winners are 2 lifetime, 2 1/16 miles over the jumps. I went 2, 6, 1, and 5. I put Proven Innocent on top. 4, the aforementioned Jack Fisher, comes out of a nice win last time. In the second try over the jumps, as you say, this horse has a little bit of flat form, having run for Shug McGahee earlier in the career, came back with the 2 starts this year, got some experience over the jumps, and then broke through last time. I just kind of thought that this horse may be an up-and-comer. We're taking a look at Freddie Flinshire. Also comes out of a win last time. And then Ancient Times, another one coming out of a win from Arch Kingsley. So for me, I had a 2, 6, 1, and 5. What did you see in the jumper? Because your opinion probably is more solid than mine.
Yeah, who knows? And to me, the depth of the race will tell when I tell you that I picked State of Affair, who you don't have on your first 4. So I went with 7 State of Affair. I'm kind of using logic like flat racing a little bit. He's just been doing this a little longer. He made his jump debut in 2020. Got knocked down by another horse and basically injured his ligaments in his hind leg and missed a year. And then came back and won last fall and has had 2 decent races this year against winners, you know, where these other horses have been maidens and are really new at it. I think the soft turf race, 2 back, he probably would have won on firmer ground. He was in front in those two races. Todd Wyatt hopes he's not in front today. He hopes he can kind of sit off Ancient Times a little bit and maybe take profit. I went 7-8-1-2, but I think it's really wide open. You mentioned Proven Innocent. I love to see a horse like that. Very similar to Snap Decision was with Shug McGee and Jack Bottom, and his pedigree's, well, he's good enough to win at Belmont last fall on the turf for Shug. You know, Jose Lascano riding him, which I think is great, you know, and you just sort of see these horses cross over and change careers. But he's a brother to No Rumbega, Ironicus, who are the other two? On Leave, Quiet Harbor. There's four graded stakes winners, you know, that are half siblings to him. And he goes back, that whole pedigree with Megan's Joy goes all the way back to some of the Rokeby horses. And it's related to Sea Hero back there somewhere. And it's just, I think that part is great, and to see the horses sort of cross over. Ancient Times to me is really interesting. Another horse, he was with Pletcher. They paid a lot of money for him as a yearling. He's a brother to Wild Dude, who's a sprinter, a grade one sprint winner for Jerry Hollendorfer, which you're like, whoa, you know. And but he ran twice for Todd. He won here in 2020. And then, obviously, he got hurt. He went to the Keeneland sale where Arch and Bill Price bought him. And they gave him some time to get over that. And he looked really good at Colonial Downs. I think he'll be in front. You know, can he last? Can he get in front and get comfortable, I guess, is the question. I'm hoping Take Profit kind of goes after him. Take Profit's coming out of a flat race at Pimlico where he was up on the pace. I think that makes for a... He's probably going to be pretty sharp early today, you know. So,
you mentioned Welchman. You had that one underneath. I didn't know what to do with Welchman. Yeah. Another Jack Fisher runner, but broke the maiden two back and did it pretty nicely. And then kind of tired badly last time. But A, it was a 2.25 miles. B, it was a little kind of a stakes race. And so I went back and forth and eventually left Welchman out, but that one scares me.
Yeah, he scares me too. He was with Barkley Tag last summer, actually ran here last summer, and I know they really liked him, you know, in that debut. The man who owns him, Sonny Via, lives down in Charlottesville, Virginia, and they took him to his home course, and he won very nicely in a maiden race there. The next race at Nashville, obviously a tougher spot. I think it was, you know, I think he's stepping up against much more experienced horses there, and I'm kind of banking that he, you know, drops back in with these horses you know, a little more competition level, gets back to the flat track type of race that ought to suit him. You know, he was not as good a flat horse as Proven Innocent, I guess, but I think he's probably likely to improve, and I'm trying to, I kind of liked his maiden win a little better than Proven Innocence, I guess, but you wouldn't take, you know, you wouldn't really split them much. I think they're both really nice four-year-olds that Jack Fisher bought in the offseason to do just this.
And we were talking about the leading trainers. Offhand, do you know leading jockey so far this season on the steeplechase?
Carrie's first call, Parker Hendricks, is leading things at the moment, and has been pretty, again, they had a really good spring.
Oh, I'm just looking at his stats,
right?
33%.
Yeah,
wow.
Right. Yeah, they came out of the box, you know, swinging, and had a really good start to the season, and he was riding first call for her and winning. I think he won a race at every stop they had in the spring and build a big lead, you know. I think he's probably, of some of these guys, a little inexperienced at Saratoga maybe, which, you know.
From the Hendricks family, I'm assuming?
Yes. Yeah, that okay. is Ricky Hendricks' son and Liza's brother and Santa Nelson now. Is his mom? She trained McDynamo, and those, so yeah, it's the Steeplechase family is all connected. We've got we also have Blythe Miller's son Teddy Davies rides the four for his father, Gray Giant. You know, so there's a lot of family connections in the jump racing. But again, I think a couple of those guys, Teddy Davies, Parker Hendricks, you know, are good up and coming riders. I think the Saratoga Steeplechase becomes a little more tactical, and just because of the speed involved, if you lose your position if you lose your position with a lap to go, is what I try to say. Like, just past the wire, that fence past the wire is pretty crucial. And if you get shuffled back coming to that, it's tricky to make up ground here. And the guys who've done it a little more know it, you know, and can kind of adapt to that.
It is different the last couple of years than it has been, in that last jump is you know, on the backstretch going in. So then it's a sprint around the final turn and down the stretch.
Yeah, and I and again, kind of like we touched on, where those horses, I don't think they, some of these, because they're that close to their flat career, probably still have some gears to kick
in,
and which will be interesting, you know. But again, I think you got to be close enough, you know, that you're not mowing them down from way back, you know. I don't think. But yeah, I mean, I think the horses with some recent flat form, like Proven Innocent, you know, who's good enough to win a New York maiden on the grass at Belmont. I mean, that's a pretty good race. Ancient Times was clearly cut out to be a decent flat horse, you know. And Welshman, his flat, he didn't really pan out as a flat horse, but you know, it's back there, you know. And a couple of others, B Major, did enough on the flat to you know, to make you take a look. State of Affair, even though he's American bred, raced in England, but he won twice over there on the flat. You know, I think those horses that have that kind of quickness here know, show up. And I like that there's so many American bred horses in here. We've kind of went on a trend of bringing English and Irish horses over, and to me this shows that there's plenty of them out there. They're a little harder to buy than they used to be, but you know, people can go do it.
I always have liked over the years the horses that are coming in. The Gray Giant comes in off a flat race at Delaware. I've always liked that over the years as kind of the setup. That his wasn't that good last time.
Oh, and in the, but they must have come off the grass, so right?
They stayed
on the sloppy track, and obviously they needed a prep, but it wouldn't have been exactly what you wanted. You wouldn't have set out to do that.
But that flat run is always, and so with this field with some bona fide kind of previous flat runners, it's kind of a fun way to kick off the day.
I'm rolling with the one there.
Ancient Times?
My man Slick Watts in the saddle for my guy, Arch Kingsley, with the recency, you know, wheeling back.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, no, and Arch.
And he may steal it.
Yeah, he may steal it. Yeah. Arch has done it here before with horses, and to me, he's tricky.
Rolling with
I watched him. Arch did the old Tom Boss move and took him to the Oklahoma infield yesterday and ran down over two hurdles, but then kind of let him blow out around a turn, too. So
he's
in good form.
He's well meant here. Yeah. I'm telling you. My steeplechase clockers got him on the radar. As long as Slick gets the idea and, you know, goes to the lead. I don't know what his name is, but...
Mark, and we should get him a headband. If he comes out in a headband, if he comes out to the paddock with a headband like Slick Watts, then we know
and we might be the only people here that actually know what the hell we're talking about.
Joe, we appreciate the visit again. Latest issue of the Saratoga Special is available online. This is horseracing.com. And, of course, you can, if you're in the area, you pick it up at the track or around town. Always highly recommended. You guys do a great job throughout the season. I will have John Sapazian on a little bit later, I thought I was doing okay. I got 24 so far. And I pulled up today's edition, and I'm behind Bedard. I'm behind Sapazian. Tom Law is right there. Always highly recommended to check out the handicappers at the Saratoga Special as well. And when you're on with Andy today, tell him it's to be able to man up and make some picks on the steeplechase races. Come on.
I'll see what I can do.
No excuses.
No excuses.
I'd like the steeplechase races. Joe, appreciate the visit.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right. We are getting closer and closer to our 10 o'clock break.
Do we do commercials in this
show? Yes, I have been told. With the top.
How are we going to fund the big gallivanting around the country if we don't do commercials?
That's right. I've been told the top of the hour, so we still have a minute or two to cover before we get there. But yes, top of the hour, we will have a commercial. And Joe, thanks. After the commercial break, Dick Powell will jump on, and again, we'll be taking a look at a little international action with Dick in preview and review, and much more coming up a little bit later on. Kim Weider from the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. We will have a little Tony Kahlo as well, taking a look at Finger Lakes. We'll probably get him in 20 minutes or so to take a look at the Pick 5 sequence, which has a $50,000 guarantee today as no one hit it yesterday at the Finger Lakes. John Sapazian coming up at 11. Tim Wilkin at about 11:30 or so. So there's your lineup. Chuck, I think we're doing okay so far, Chuck.
Well, I haven't cursed yet.
I think you can get away with that on internet satellite radio, maybe.
I don't want the wrath of Tina. Steve would probably, you know, Steve will let loose every once in a while, but Tina's a teacher, and we got to kind of stay within the line.
I say that. I'm not totally sure about that. I'm kind of thinking, well, on cable TV you can swear, so satellite radio, I'm not sure that they're totally equivalent. But You mentioned it earlier. I will just reiterate, nice stakes action today. It's a short field, but once again, kind of a nice fun field today here at Saratoga, the Honorable Miss. And it's only a field of four, but Bella Sophia and Frank's Raquette, who were 1-2 in the Vagrancy back in the middle of May. Subsequently, Bella Sophia came back in the Better Roses and won that as well. Last year, she kind of announced herself with a big win in the test. So I went slightly for Bella Sophia, but Frank's Raquette off the try last time I think is going to make this an interesting race. So, again, four-horse field in the Honorable Miss coming up in race number four. But, again, quality versus quantity.
You know, there's a horse in there that people had been clamoring to see in open company. And that's the Ohio-bred Emma Devil, who ran some spectacular sheet numbers, you know, beating up on Ohio-breds. And there had been a lot of clamoring for that horse to, you know, to leave the Buckeye State and try open company. And this is the spot they chose, which seems a little bit ambitious, but. She runs big numbers.
Yeah.
And she's fast. And this is a contentious race. It's a four-horse race, but all of them have speed. All of them have ability. All of them do a lot more winning than they do losing. And it's going to be an interesting tactical race to kind of see how it plays out. I'm assuming that Jose Ortiz, who's riding the Emma Devil, is going to go to the lead. I mean, she doesn't seem to have any other way. But it kind of puts... Bella Sophia in a little bit of a tricky spot in that she's inside, and then Flavian Pratt, who is on the rail with Frank Raquette, he's got a decision to make, because does he just stay in there behind them? Does he try to work his way outside? Kimara is the only one that I think is going to be taking a little bit off the pace. But, you know, these four-horse races can turn into jockeys.
Yeah,
chess matches.
Oftentimes you think, well, nothing could happen there, and those are the races where weird things do happen. But we'll take a break. Our 10 o'clock break, it's actually 10:01, so I'm a little bit behind, but hopefully that works out. So we'll send it to a break. We will be back in a few. Again, Dick Powell will join us when we come back. Stay tuned.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service.